You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, brought to you by Full Sneak Gear. Check out their entire lineup at fullsneakgear.com. Also, be sure to check out our entire stable of podcasts at sportsmansempire.com. Mic check, 1, 2. Ladies and gentlemen, woo! Here we go, Friday episode. Who am I talking with today? I'm talking with Mitch Shirk. He is the host of the Pennsylvania Woodsman podcast. And if you live in Pennsylvania, you should definitely be listening to this episode. Not only does he have on some excellent guests, but when it comes to habitat, he is a wealth of knowledge. Make sure you go check out the Pennsylvania Woodsman podcast. Today, you know, today's been a trying day, right? And how do I put this? Being self-employed is awesome. I can work as much or as little as I want. But when it comes to problems like the ones that I'm having today, where I not only have to do data entry, but I also have to be, you know, the CEO, I have to be the social media guy, I have to be, in today's example, the tech guy. And so I have about 3 hours, 4 hours of work left to do today. And all of a sudden, my computer starts giving me shit. And so I tried to update this specific program. That program, in order for it to be upgraded, my operating software had to be updated, which when that was updated, now I have to go back and update about 10 or 15 other programs that are connected to my operating software. And so instead of getting any work done today, I've been basically treading water, and I'll be working late tonight. So that is part of the problem here at the old Sportsman's Empire compound. But I'll tell you this right now, I'd rather do this every single day up here in my office than sit in a cubicle for 30 seconds and work for the man. You know what I mean? So shout out to all the entrepreneurs out there. Shout out to all the business owners out there. I know exactly what you're going through. So good vibes sent your way. And if you're on the factory line too, man, hey, I ain't mad at you. You do you. Today, this episode was supposed to be about habitat. And you will hear in the intro of this podcast that I do with Mitch that we were going to talk about habitat. But it got derailed about 30 minutes into the episode, and we were just having a great conversation about life, about a good conversation about hunting, why we like hunting, the direction hunting is going in, our kids, what the future of hunting is going to look like, just a whole bunch of random topics pop up, and we never got into habitat. So this is a good old-fashioned BS session, and I hope you guys enjoy it. We eventually will do a habitat podcast with Mitch because, like I said earlier, he is a wealth of knowledge, and I hope you guys enjoy it. So commercial time, dude, I got to send a huge shout out to all of you for taking time out of your day to listen to this. If you could do me a huge favor, just go Google some of these brands, read up on some of their products. That's it. If you're looking for a saddle, check out Tethered. If you're looking for a badass broadhead, check out Wasp Archery. Discount code NFC20 for 20% off. If you're looking for, in my opinion, some of the best optics in the game, that's Vortex Optics. If you go to EuroOptic, EuroOptic.com, enter the discount code 9FINGER10, the number 9, the word finger, and the number 10, you can get 10% off any purchase of Vortex Optics. Code Blue Sense, go check out the Rope-A-Dope system, codebluesense.com, discount code NFC20 for 20% off. The Woodman's Pal is a badass machete. They've been around, American-made, been around for like 70 or 80 years or something like that. Go check them out, woodmanspal.com. Huntworth Gear. Man, some of the best in the biz. Oh, back up just a bit. I do have a discount code for the Woodman's Pal. It's NFC. NFC, and that's going to get you, I don't even know what's, I think 20% off of the Woodman's Pal. Huntworth, keep an eye out for all the discount codes on their social media. They're pretty good about running sales off and on throughout the entire year. Badass layering system, and you will not be disappointed. And then last but not least, my company, Full Sneak Gear, badass t-shirts. I don't have a hoodie yet, but it's coming. We got crew necks, hats, stocking caps, Slayer tee, Licking Branch tee. Go check them out, fullsneakgear.com. And now, we're done talking. Let's get into today's episode with my man, Mitch Shirk. 3, 2, 1. All right, everybody, welcome back to another episode of the Nine Finger Chronicles podcast. And we're continuing our conversation about habitat improvement, habitat management today with my good buddy out of Pennsylvania, Mitchell Shirk. Mitch, man, how you doing?
Hanging in there, Dan. Thanks again for having me. Appreciate it.
Yeah, absolutely. So for those of you guys who are listening, you can't see this, but he's got a bear rug hanging in the background of the of his computer screen there. And do you bear hunt every year?
Yeah, I've bear hunted every year since I'm 12 years old in Pennsylvania. I've been fortunate enough that one you're looking at right there, I actually shot that when I was 13 years old. It's kind of a funny story. I'll make it short. You know, you're supposed to have a mentor or an adult with you when you're hunting up until 16 years old.
Yep.
And I always hunted in a camp with multiple guys, and we make bear drives in some really rough terrain. And the first year I went, I sat with my dad. And the second year, they're like, do you want to sit by yourself? Me being me, I'm like, yeah, sure. And the first year I sat by myself, I shot a bear, and then had to tell the stories to the game wardens. And they're like, kind of sounds like you were sitting by yourself. No, it wasn't. But anyway, that was neat. I shot one when I was in college in Pennsylvania, and I kind of didn't get real gung-ho about bear hunting then for a while. But now I'm probably as much into bear hunting now as I am deer hunting. And I killed one last year in New Jersey when they reopened their season with the bow. I'm going to do that again this year. So yeah, I really enjoy bear hunting.
Man, that's something that I don't know about it yet. I've never done it, so I don't understand it, right? And so, you know, the whole baiting part of it is, I don't know, maybe a little bit muddy water for me. Yeah. Again, never done it. I'm not going to cast any kind of judgment on it, but sitting over, you know, a pile of Rice Krispie treats or whatever it is that, you know, the big loaves of bread or the bait piles that you guys have, I don't know if that would do it for me, but here's what I've heard. And that is that guys have the same feeling going into it, but when the bear shows up, and it completely changes your attitude towards that style of hunting, because it's such like an incredible animal, and just getting that close to it is with all their senses that they have, is just like a white-tailed buck, right? I mean, getting that close to something is success in itself.
Well, and the other thing too, it's unique. So Pennsylvania, we cannot bear hunt, bear hunt. We cannot bait. It's not legal to bait bear in Pennsylvania, and you cannot use hounds in Pennsylvania. So you are hunting him based off of food, sign, and if you're gun hunting, you know, guys will make drives for the guns. But New Jersey, they used to allow baiting for bear, and New Jersey is a state where you can bait for deer even on public land. But they made it that you're not legally allowed to sit within 300 feet of a bait site while bear hunting. So really, when it comes to how I bear hunt, I've never hunted on bait. I don't do anything other than scout, look for food, look for sign, look for cover. And I basically deer hunted for bear.
Yeah.
And it's really fun. I've gotten excited over some big deer I've killed. I get every bit as excited, if not more, when a bear comes in. So yeah, it's a good time.
Yeah. Are you guys allowed to use dogs or hounds up in Pennsylvania? No.
No hounds in this part. I think when you get into New England states, you can. And of course, when you get into Virginia and Carolinas, you can. But Pennsylvania and New Jersey, the two states I'm bear hunting in, and even New York, no hounds are allowed.
Yeah. That to me seems wild. Like, I don't see the interest. Like, I don't, at this point, like I said, I don't have the interest to sit over a box of Lucky Charms and wait for, and wait for bears. But what does interest me, and it seems like this gigantic adrenaline rush, would be to follow hounds in the out west or somewhere and have, you know, listen to the hounds track down the bear, tree them, and then go do that. That seems like just a huge rush, or a mountain lion or some other predator.
Yeah. Well, and I think just like deer hunting, bear hunting has its own interest group, so to speak. I mean, you've got, think about whitetails. You've got guys who love private land management and habitats, and they're going to hunt on their, you know, manipulated properties versus the guy who's knocking on doors permission, or, you know, I'm strictly public land bow hunting, or I like to hunt with a group of guys in rifle season, make tries. It's the same thing with bear hunting. Like, I know, conversing with some friends I have in Virginia, like, you're considered like taboo, I guess, if you shoot a bear while you're deer hunting in the woods and a bear comes along. Like, you're not a bear hunter in that case. A real bear hunter goes in with hounds, and it's like, to each their own, do what you want to do. But I mean, the hound thing, I think it would be cool to experience, but, you know, you talked about not having much interest in the bait side of things. It's kind of how I am with the hounds. I have no problem with anybody who does it, and I kind of like to experience it, but just doesn't really, it's not like, it doesn't trip my trigger.
Yeah. Again, I'm not going to pass judgment on anything that until I actually do it. I will say this. I went to a high fence operation down in Texas, and I can say that if I was deer hunting down there, I mean, it was a fun, unique experience, and I'm glad that I did it. However, it definitely, like, I will never, I shouldn't say never, because maybe something different happens, you know, when I get older, I change my mindset, because we all change, and maybe I would do it in a, like, 20 years from now or something. I don't know. But as of right now, like, any type of high fence deer hunting I have zero interest in it at all. Now,
you and me both, buddy.
With the exotics that we hunted there, I shot a giant ostrich looking bird. What's it called? Rhea, they're called.
Oh.
They're called Rheas. And so I shot a gigantic ostrich when I was down there. And I was like, okay, that happened. That's cool. Would I ever pay money to go do it again? No, I probably wouldn't. But it was definitely a unique experience, and it was more about who I was with, not what I was doing at that point.
Yeah. Again, I try not to pass judgment on anything, because there's somebody bigger for judgment cases. But when it comes to the high fence hunting too, I mean, I've heard stories of high fence situations where animals were so tame, and, you know, they had it lined up for somebody to come hunt it, and the week before they peppered stuff with paintball guns, so that way it was a little bit more wild. It's like, just stuff like that just doesn't interest me.
That's crazy. Oh, man. I do have to ask you, I'm in a weird mood this morning, all right? And I got to ask you.
Makes two of us.
Yeah, I know. I need to ask you a question. And because this has been something that is on my mind a lot recently, and that's the word happiness, okay? And I'm kind of curious, what are things in your life that make you happy?
You said you wanted to make this a habitat. And
I know.
Podcast. We'll get there. Time to go down that rabbit hole, dude.
We'll get there. We'll get there.
So you say that. I'm in this, like, weird, I don't know if it's necessarily a crossroads. I'm just at this weird point in my life where I'm, like, standing back and reevaluating everything that's got me to here. Mm-hmm. And I have to ask myself that question a lot. What makes me happy? So I guess to lay the foundation for that, I mean, I got two kids, 4 and 2, you know, I'm fairly new to the dad thing. I'm fairly new to the husband thing. I've got a great career, but it's becoming more demanding of my time and this and that. And, like, truly what makes me happy is solitude in the woods. I mean, I want to do everything hunting that I possibly can. But the reality is where the strings are pulled, I've done like next to nothing as far as hunting for the 2024 season this year compared to normal. And trying to find purpose and trying to find what makes me happy throughout seasons of my life, that has been an extremely difficult thing for me to navigate. So I can truthfully say what right now what makes me the happiest of all is watching my boys grow. I mean, like I can't believe the level of love and happiness that two little people can bring me, even though at the same time I wanted to throw them through the freaking wall when they won't let me sleep at night. Like it's
The
how is
truth,
something
dude.
that frustrates you so much that you love
Exactly.
so much? But like, you know, we've had some good weather this week, so one of the things I enjoyed when I got home from work, my wife went and did field hockey practice. I took the boys to the park, and my 4-year-old, he was actually, when we had some nice weather, he was already riding his bicycle without training wheels at 3. So now, like, I can take him out and just let him go. And seeing, like, we got him a new bike for Christmas or for his birthday, and he's riding this bike around, ripping on it. And he's like, "Thank you so much, Daddy." I'm like, honestly, that's truly what makes me happy. Deer hunting and bear hunting and all the stuff that we talk about on a podcast, I love that stuff, but man, it. I never thought I'd say this, but there's a sense that's getting less important, or it's just shifted. It's still important to me, but the things that were important about it are now different. I don't know if that
Yeah.
makes sense or not, Dan.
No, it makes 100% sense because I have that same, those same thoughts right now in my life. Like, I'm to the point where, man, I've done hunting, right? I not all types of hunting, but when it comes to whitetails, the rut, man, I've done it for a long time now. And if there's a soccer game or a football game or a baseball game or some kind of event that my kids are participating in, man, and I have to choose between going hunting and hanging with my kids, even if there's nothing to do, even if there's nothing to do, I'd rather hang with my kids than go hunting. And that may be crazy for someone who is as passionate about hunting as I am, but my family is first for me by miles, and second is hunting. The cool thing about it is, you know, you can involve your family into your passion and getting your kids outside and all that stuff. But it's really like I it just it every year it tends to matter a little bit less and a little bit less for me.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
So I got a question to ask you then on that very topic. So when you think about what we just talked about, kids making us happy and our passion in the outdoors, one overwhelming theme that I've noticed, whether it's hosts I've had on my show or listen if I've listened to another podcast, is there's definitely a difference in where you're at hunting wise based on the external pulls you have outside of hunting. Like, are do you have a family? Do you have a wife? Do you have kids? Do you have a job? What's your time constraints like that? I'm just curious, like, when you think about hunting industry and the media, like, you get that big macho man, I'm a big buck killer, whatever I am. Do you notice that same thing or that same trend within who's talking about what aspects of hunting? I don't know if I worded that in a way that makes sense, but like, do you experience anything like that with like people being at different places in their life causes them to talk about hunting in a different light?
Absolutely, 100%. And I do that myself. And you know, kind of going back to a episode that I had with Justin Czar recently, I made some comments about 25-year-olds, right? That didn't go over very well. And basically, what I was getting at was, and again, this was a social media clip that I posted, and the people who were kind of that weren't going along with it didn't listen to the whole podcast. They just listened to the clip that I posted on social media, and it pissed some people off, basically saying, like, you know, age has nothing to do with it. Where, in my opinion, is I was 25 once, and I was completely gung-ho on hunting. And I had, you know, when I was 25, I had about 12 years of hunting experience. Now, that experience doesn't mean much to me. Like, and because really when I was 26 is when I really started taking things serious. So experience, my experiences for the first 10 years versus the second 10 years were completely different, right? When it comes to, if I'm going to compare my break down my entire 20 plus years of hunting experience, what's that, what does that mean? Okay.
Right.
And so, but I will tell you this, in 2016, I thought one way about hunting and strategy and things like that when I was, you know, when I was 36 years old. Now I'm 42 and I look at it, I look at things differently. So what I'm getting at is, you know, experience, there's no real definition for what makes somebody an expert. Like, having experience and being an expert at something are two completely different things, if you ask me. And so, yeah, a 25-year-old can have, you know, have 20 years of experience hunting, but they don't have 40 years of experience, you know, like, and I'm sure out there, there's a 60-year-old listening to me talk about hunting and going, this guy doesn't know shit yet. Right?
Yeah.
Because time, it's different for everybody. There's a Dan Johnson out there right now who has already done what I've done, and he's done what I'm about to do. And he has a different take on, like, he thinks I'm young and he thinks I'm green. You know what I mean? And so it's just, it's really difficult for, I don't know. Like, I think, and the whole thing was based off of taking advice from others. Like, you know, I made a comment about a 25-year-old interviewing another 25-year-old on a podcast about hunting strategy. And I just kind of, I kind of giggled at that because I'm like, hey man, what's a 25-year-old going to tell me that I don't already know? Right.
Right.
And so really what it comes down to is their experiences. And that specific example, the 25-year-olds did not have a lot of experience. Now, again, I will say this, that the 25-year-old that reached out to me had a ton of hunting experience, right? And we had a conversation with each other, and we're going to have another conversation with each other, not on a podcast, just I told him, hey man, let's talk about it. Because if you just say if you make a comment and don't care where it goes and someone else disagrees with you, well, that's kind of ignorant on my part if I would do something like that. So I want to know where this guy's coming from. I want to know what he has to say. And that to me is very important in communicating with other people within the industry and within this community.
Well, context is everything, regardless exactly. of what aspect of life and where you're describing it from. But yeah, so one of the things I thought about, because, you know, where I'm at, like, I got married fairly young, kids fairly young, and I was at the, like, when I got married, I was at, in my mind, the peak, and I'm starting to get the snowball rolling. I'm getting better. I'm doing things better. I'm gaining traction in aspects of hunting, and call it young and stupid, but the train slowed down quite a bit with those things. And even though
that's life,
I guess,
man.
I knew it is, and I knew it was going to happen, but I didn't, I guess I mentally wasn't prepared for it. So I went through this whole process of, you know, what we're just talking about. And then I'm thinking to myself too, when you think about hunting media, because, like, how do you, is there a way to like help people that listen, mm-hmm. be like, look, this is what you have in to process. Like, if you're going to go down this rabbit hole, you're going to go down the way of kids and wife and career and this, and like you should curb your expectations this way, or mm-hmm. I don't know, sometimes I just think maybe we just got to learn the hard way. I don't know.
Man, that's how I've learned everything. I mean, if you want to talk about deer hunting strategy, the way that I learned, and I've, dude, this is a topic that I've been talking about for 10 years now, right? The Nine Finger Chronicles podcast has been up and running. This is the 2024 is the 10th year that I've been doing this. And learning from failure has been the motto of this podcast, because with not only my experiences, but everybody that I've talked to about it. And like, it sucks going through it, but I can look back now X number of years later and I can say, holy shit, I needed that. I needed that failure to get me where I'm at. If I didn't do it and I just kept going in and go, and throwing excuses at why I'm not killing deer, well, that's a loser's mentality, and I'm not going to do that. And so in order for me to find success, I had to have failure in order to go, okay, well, I can't set up here because the thermals are doing this, or I can't set up here because the wind, once it goes into this terrain feature, it swirls and kind of comes back around, you know, all you throw a million examples out there right now. And so, I don't know. It's just, life is funny, man. It really is. It is frustrating. Like, it's crazy. One thing that I have tried to do as far as my personal hunting career over the years, I have tried to, and I think you used the term here, like curb my expectations to the point where I want to go out. I want to have a good time. I'm not worried about what other people think of the deer that I shot. I don't care about what other people think of the strategy that I use or where I hunt and things like that. Right. And so I go out, I hunt my hunt, and if I shoot a deer, man, I shoot a deer, but I'm going to have fun regardless of what the outcome is. And so I don't know, man, it's less about the destination and more about the journey. And I mean, that's a meme right there, right?
It is, but that is so accurate. So it's like you just talking about doing you and keeping happy. Mm-hmm. That's all that matters. And let's face it, I hunt for Mitchell and Dan hunts for Dan, and we don't do it for anybody else.
Right.
And I have that exact same mentality and philosophy. However, I will be the first to admit it wasn't always that way for me. It was 100%. A time where I was, and I'm sure you experienced that, where there was a time I was concerned about this and I was concerned about that. And that's got so many problems, dude. Uh-huh. There's a lot of problems for that. And one of the flaws that I've found with that, whether it's the podcast myself or other people that are in that same part of their hunting life or career, if that's something they do, like I've noticed it when it comes to like strategy podcasts or people talking, like it's almost like they gotta prove something to themselves and talk. And I hear conceptual things of just like, I call BS. Like I feel like we're just talking to impress somebody, and it's like, I don't care about it. I just want to do what makes me happy. And I tell you what, that makes me a lot happier. So maybe that's the answer to your question.
What's the comparison is the thief of joy, comparing yourself to others. And I will say this, when I started, like I loved deer hunting before 2006, right? I enjoyed going out and hunting turkey and deer. And then I became a psychopath in 2006 where I just dove into deer hunting. Okay. Bow hunting specifically. But I told myself when I get to a point, well, let me take a step back. In 2006, I started filming and creating content for White Knuckle Productions. I'm not sure if you're familiar with like Todd Prignitz and that whole crew. And I was one of the early, like one of the first guys in that whole crew. And I said to myself right then, I said, if this stops being fun for me, then I'm going to quit. That's the only thing. And for a while there, it stopped being fun. And so that led to some of the reasons why I stopped filming for that. Not all the reasons, but some of the reasons. And so I did a season. It was like 2004, 13 and 14, I did some seasons there where I just hunted. I wasn't successful. I was chasing one deer. No, wait, he was dead by then. I was 2013. I got skunked because I was, chasing a single buck. 2014, I believe, I dedicated not an entire season, but some of my rut hunt to one of my buddies. I made a deal with him. Hey, you come film me, because he was living in Missouri at the time. I was saying, you come film me, and then I will trade you. If you come film me for however many years until you draw an Iowa tag, you can come hunt my farm, and I will then film, be the camera guy behind it. So 2014, for about a week or so, we got I dedicated in my season towards him, and then I didn't shoot a deer. I didn't shoot a deer in 2015. I think that's when my other son was born. So that he was born in April, and so that was difficult to get away at that point. But I don't even remember what we were talking about.
We're just talking about the journey. Because the journey and the process is
right,
big.
Right, right. And so, to me, it has to be fun, right? Because if I treat what I'm doing now because I'm getting to the point, I don't want to say burnout, but I'm getting to the point after 10 years of doing this where there's days where I'm not having as much fun as I used to be having creating content, and it's now a business, and it's now how I feed my family. And so now it's a job, right? And so now I have to make decisions now. Like when I was doing this and I had another job, I could say, this isn't cool, I'm not going to do it. But now I have to make decisions based off of what's going to get me money. I mean, this is the truth, right? What gets me money is doing certain things. And yeah, it may not be fun or like exciting for me, but I have to do it in order to continue the path that I'm on and continue being self-employed, right? Because now I have this family, and now I have to make payments out of my company for my house, for my bills, all that stuff. So it takes on a whole different feel, and you have to make sacrifices and decisions just like anywhere else in your life.
You absolutely do. The journey is the thing, and I'm growing better at not looking at the end goal of filling a tag or whatever that would be. I'm trying to enjoy the process it takes to get there, because that's where the true enjoyment is. My wife makes fun of me all the time because people say, I shot a buck this year, and pretty early, like, oh, are you content now? Are you happy? And my wife answered in that season, she's like, no, he's never happy because now he's done. And I was like, well, that's because I like hunting. It's not really the kill I like. And right. You think about when you say a statement like that, then what do you enjoy? And I enjoy everything about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I'm really looking forward. I think the biggest thing that I'm looking forward to now, believe it or not, is this upcoming turkey season.
I never thought I'd hear Dan.
I know, right? I know, right? People are rolling over in their graves right now because I said that. And I don't know, man. It's because of my kids. My kids want to go turkey hunting. And of course, I'm going to go turkey hunting with my kids, right? My daughter wants to go shoot it's something that she is actively thinking about. And for a child to actively think about going and trying to kill a turkey, dude, that's a foot in the door to a lifelong outdoorsman right there. You know what I mean? And so I would be an absolute idiot to not go that direction with her, right? I'm a deer hunter. I don't want to take my kid turkey hunting. That would be stupid. And so I have to make sure that I am fanning the flames, so to speak, about that. And so my oldest son is old enough to probably come out, sit still with me or my stepdad out in the woods. I think it's time to take him. He's not going to have a tag this year. He's not going to shoot, but he will. He will sit and come out with us because he's interested in it. And I'm not going to go straight into hunting. My daughter, I didn't take her straight into hunting. I made her come out with me a couple times, a couple years, and then she got the opportunity to hunt last year. It was her first year with a tag. We got real close, but the cool thing about it was she failed, but she's still interested in going again, which that's a big deal, man.
That's a huge deal. And to me, hats off to you, because in my opinion, which I know what they say about opinions, but in my opinion, the direction that you're taking that is the right direction with kids. I get sick and tired of seeing young kids that don't seem to have an interest, but they want to do something with dad. So what do? Dad takes them hunting and they can't do anything about learning. It's all about getting them to kill something. And I've seen kids that kill something and I don't even think they know what happened. They can't even appreciate what they did. And I'm not saying it's all bad, but to me, I can remember when I was a young kid going with dad, not hunting, and having experiences that drew more from me. Yeah. And I'll never forget when I first started hunting and I had a failure and it like pissed me off as a little kid. And I wanted to overcome that. And then when I did it, the elation I had and that whole process, like, I feel like this instant gratification society that we live in for kids and hunting, it throws a bad taste in my mouth. When a kid can go take a crossbow at 5 years old and shoot a big deer and literally all they did was pull the trigger, I question, is that the right thing? I just personally, for me, I'm going to take it at my kid's pace, and that's how I want to take it.
Yeah. Which kind of leads me into another question. Oh, by the way, we're not going to talk about habitat today. We're down a different path, and we're going to talk about that a different time.
I'm all right with that.
But my thoughts on parents who make the first hunt or the first buck too easy, right? So I had a guy on a while ago. I want to say maybe a year or two ago, and he shot his first buck that he ever shot was, it might have been with a crossbow, and it was like a 177-inch buck. And so I asked him, I go, hey, man, what was it like hunting all of those years, your first buck as a 13-year-old or a 14-year-old was a 177-inch giant whitetail. What were the next 10 years like after that? And he goes, they sucked. They absolutely sucked. And then he took time off and he stopped hunting. It was because his first deer, and I think he even mentioned that his dad put him on it, right? Which for the dad is thinking, hey man, that's an awesome, I'm going to give my kid something that I don't even have yet, or, you know, whatever. And so, but the kid shot the deer and then he's like, there wasn't another deer of that caliber or size in 15 years. And so the next 5 years, I slowly slipped out of hunting because I kept comparing everything to that first big buck. And it was he even said it was the worst possible thing that could happen. I should have shot a fork horn or a spike or a button buck or a doe that first year. But, you know, who's going to turn down a 170 coming through the woods, right? And so he shot it, and then he just admitted that, man, the next handful of years, they absolutely sucked because I kept comparing what I had on trail camera and what I was seeing in the woods to that first year, and there was nothing that can compare to it.
So I have a buddy that his daughter, she was somewhere between 13 and 15 years old at the time. And for the first time ever, she's like, Dad, I kind of want to go deer hunting with you. And he's like, okay. So he bought her a brand new deer rifle and took her out hunting. And the property they were hunting, there was some food plots and there's all this and that stuff. And there was one deer in particular that year that I'm going to say, probably if I had to guess, he was going to gross in the 140s. Guess maybe he was like a four-year-old deer. He was a heck of a deer. And this property, like the guys that were managing or hunting this property, they were like, hey, I really think because this deer hangs on us a lot, I really think he's got potential to get to 5 years old. So therefore, I really think all of us that, you know, have deer, we're going to pass this deer, give him that pass. And they all agreed, like, that's what they're going to do. So the opening day of Pennsylvania rifle season, my buddy who's hunting this property takes his daughter, and it was he, his daughter, and his dad. They're all together for the first time, three generations sitting together, and they're sitting in this food plot. And wouldn't you know it, this 140-inch 10-pointer walks out in the field 30 yards from them and feeds. And to let the story go on, he did not let his daughter shoot that deer.
Yeah.
And later that night, she shot a 6-pointer. And there's a couple ways you can look at this, but this is my opinion, and, you know, take it for what it is. She was just as excited to shoot that 6-pointer. She would have had zero appreciation for what she killed to kill that 10-pointer, 140-inch deer for somebody that had invested in it. And you could say that's ugly, and I agree. Like, when he tells the story to people who don't understand whitetail hunting or, you know, that dynamic or that culture, they're like, that's ridiculous that you wouldn't that you wouldn't let her shoot that. Maybe so, but at the same time, the experience that they had with those three generations together that night in that blind with that 6-pointer, that was a memory they won't forget. And it accomplished two goals, because the next year I think somebody shot that buck and accomplished their goal, the biggest buck of their life. But all that to say, she's not hunting right now. So what difference would it have made in that situation? Would that have retained her if she shot a bigger buck? I don't, based on what you just shared with me with that guest you had on, I don't think it would have made a difference in hunter retention.
Yeah, I don't know. I think there is a little bit of mystique around the next year's bigger buck, right? Because that's what I've done throughout my, I guess, the course of my hunting career, is I've tried to stair step, right? I didn't necessarily go through the it's brown, it's down phase, but I definitely went through, if it's 140, it's getting an arrow, right?
Right.
And now I'm not shooting 140s, right? And now I'm focused on, okay, I need, I want an older, more mature whitetail, which is just a tricky way of saying I want bigger antlers, right?
Sure.
And so, you know, if a 180-inch three-year-old comes through, I'm shooting a three-year-old, okay? Don't get anything twisted about that, right? Like, age means nothing if the rack is big enough. And I think a lot of people would maybe disagree with that statement, but then shoot that buck. You know what I mean? And so age is only important as the antlers are big, if that makes any sense at all. So
it does. And for a lot of people, I think that's true. Mm-hmm. And it goes back to what we were talking about earlier. If that's what somebody wants to do, why do you care if it doesn't affect you? Why do you have an opinion or have to bring somebody down in that case if that's what they want to do? Vice versa to the guy who is growing the maximum quality deer and stuff. Mm-hmm. Why does he have a say in another hunter that wants to shoot a 100-inch two-year-old?
Yeah.
Who frickin' cares? Do what makes you happy. I just gave a presentation the other week. And it was all around food plots. And, you know, I talked about some failures that I commonly see in food plots. And it was, you know, from soil aspects and crop management. But then the big failure that I typically see in a situation like that is not setting your property up with food plots appropriately to hold mature bucks. And I made this disclaimer. I said, look, for the rest of this presentation, I'm going to talk about mature bucks. Mm-hmm. I said, now my disclaimer is, I could care less what anybody shoots. If the first legal buck that walks into gun range for you or bow range for you makes you happy, shoot that deer. Don't let any human being tell you you shouldn't say that. But I said, I'm also going to say, I do know a lot of people get to a point where they say they want to see bigger and better.
Yeah.
And if you're looking to think you can't make a difference, you can. Here's some things that helped me and kind of treated it that way. I just think that's so important at this point in time.
Yeah. You know, here's what I will admit. I've said some things in this last 10 years of podcasting and content that have gone against what other people believe. Or, I mean, there's nobody out there that's going to agree with you 100% on all your opinions about everything, right?
Yep.
And I've said some things that in the past that I don't necessarily regret saying, because at the time of saying them, I that's what I believed. But it is okay to not necessarily flip-flop your opinions, but change your opinions based off age, based off of experience, based off of knowledge and information and things like that. And so I think a lot of my opinions change throughout the course of, a decade, as, you know, as far as how I approach hunting, what I think hunting's all about, my thoughts and opinions on the hunting culture and the hunting industry and things like that. And so it's always changing. I mean, that's life, right? It's ever evolving. And so my thoughts and approaches towards certain things are always evolving as well.
That's the only constant in life, is that everything's changing. I mean, I shared with you on the phone one time about some changes that I've had in my own personal hunting, like the places I hunted then versus now. There's some differences, and most of it revolves around the fact that I'm at a different place in my life. And I think the time that I can associate to something and what makes it fun has a big impact. Mm-hmm. Like, there was a time when I had more time on my hands. I was all in to pass every single buck to get to a certain age class or a certain caliber of deer and do things around a property. Like, I was all about that. And I still am, but the problem is I'm not going to do something that conflicts with somebody else's interest if it's their property. So I'm going to do what I enjoy doing. And if that means hunting different properties and shooting a little bit smaller deer, but that's what I have time to do and can dedicate to, and that's what's my own personal thought, I'm going to do that. That's what makes it fun.
Yeah. I think over the next 10 years, and this is a guess at this point. Okay. So the last 10 years, now it's the next 10 years. I think I'm just going to stop caring about everything and just go out and hunt for fun and get my kids involved for fun. And because ultimately, I think if I teach my kids that the destination is inches and big antlers, then all I'm doing is creating additional problems for the future of the whitetail community in North America. And so I have to educate my kids that, you know, hunting is supposed to be fun. Hunting is supposed to mean something more than a number, right? And I don't want my kids to fall into the same rut that I've fallen into before, where it's like, God, I need to shoot a big buck, right? I want to shoot a big buck only. I'm just blessed that I live in Iowa and we got big bucks. Yeah. You know what I mean? And so, I don't know. It's just, I think about all these things all the time, along with all the other thoughts that are running through my head. And I just try not to worry. I try to go through life and just enjoy every possible moment, because there is an end, right? There is an end to this world that we live in. And, despite the facts or despite what you believe, what happens after death, there's an end here. And I just want to enjoy every opportunity and every moment with the people that I love the most.
So, good point there. So you talk about the last 10 years and, you know, the chase, big deer. And that's been me. And I'm not going to act like I'm immune to that. Now, I still think about, I'm always looking at big deer, thinking about big deer. I want to shoot a big deer and put them on my wall and look at them and tell a story. I'm the same way.
Yep.
But you're talking about, like, this next 10 years, you're talking about the image that you portray hunting and life that you portray hunting to your kids. Mm-hmm. And that's a much different message than you probably have portrayed at one point in your life through the podcast earlier, right?
Mm-hmm. 100%.
So my question then would be, when you think about if you pull the family aspect away, you just think about podcast message. I mean, the hunting industry has done a great job of getting us to be better hunters and better information and stepping the bar up there. And it's led us down this rabbit hole to where we're at now. So when you think about the next 10 years of the Nine Finger Chronicles podcast, how do you envision or want to see that message get changed in light of what we're talking about now with listeners and that positive aspect of hunting?
Yeah. So that's a great question. And here's the deal. Everybody's goals are different. And I heard a little hot take, or it's not a hot take. It was just someone's opinion. And I don't blame them for having this opinion. And the whole point of this conversation was, you know, someone was kind of getting demonized by others within the hunting community about only wanting to shoot big antlered deer, right? And dude, if that's your goal and you want to dream it and you want to accomplish it, that's cool, man. That is awesome. But there is a little bit of a conversation about the greater good that I think all of us are missing. And that is, in order to get deer to a higher age, to grow big antlers, here's what you need. You need to have them survive for longer periods of time, straight up. You need to have places where they feel safe, habitat improvement. You need to have trigger control, right? You need to have a little bit larger acreage in order for that deer to live and survive and have food to where he doesn't need to go anywhere else. He needs to stay on that property. And that's what all this habitat work is for, right? And then we have to say, okay, what does it take to do that? It takes land, and it takes less hunters per acre in order to accomplish that goal, right? And so in order to get big bucks with big antlers, which is the goal for even me these days, there has to be less hunters per acre. There has to be a mentality where I'm going to pass, like in the area that I hunt, dude, people are passing 5-year-old 180-inch deer every single year. I'll never do that, but that's what I'm saying is that's the norm in certain parts of Iowa. Okay. And so in order to accomplish the goal, you have to have, I mean, it's simple. It's just less hunters per acre. Right. And so now a single hunter is taking up more acres, which the reason they're doing it is for big antlers. Right. And so the whole greater good here is now we have a smaller hunting community just so certain people can. And then they're like, well, what about public land? That's great. Public land is awesome. Go hunt public land until you're running in to all of the people who used to be on private. And I'm fast forwarding several years here that can't afford leases, that can't afford to buy their own farms. Now they're shifting to public because it's their last chance. Now they are running into other hunters who have been kicked off and displaced. And now that experience of hunting public land is not as good. And so now people are quitting. And that's happening right now across North America. Whether you believe it or not, it's happening. People, hunters are being displaced and they're not coming back to it, right? And I'm not saying this is, I had a conversation with a turkey biologist. And I said, what's the problem with wild turkey? And he's like, there's not one problem that's causing their decline in numbers. It is death by 1,000 cuts, right? Mm-hmm. And so big antlers is not necessarily the only reason why hunting is happening, because it's a cultural thing, but the culture drives decision-making. And when you have a culture that is 100% focused on big bucks and that drives the culture, then all there is a downstream effect to those decisions. And I'm part of the problem. It's hard to explain, because I want big bucks too, because they're cool, dude. Big bucks are cool. But are big bucks so cool that it will undermine the future of hunting? You know, to where it's a pay-to-play system, or only those who can afford leases, can afford outfitting, can afford large chunks of land. You know, it's hard to hate on people for having a dream, because I want to be a landowner someday. But at the same time, you realize that big antlers and big old mature bucks that we all talk about, big mature bucks, there's more to it than that.
And it's tough for me too, because when you talk about private land, leased land, owned land, all that stuff, and then habitat management, food plots, and all that stuff to make better, higher quality hunting, I grew up doing that. Mm-hmm. Like, that is in my blood, and I'm not gonna lie, like, of course the cool thing now in hunting content is to take a crap on that, because that's not cool. Nobody cares about any of that.
Right.
I don't know why, because the level of work that goes into that versus the scouting people talk about they do in public. I know there's some hardcore hunters out there that do a lot of boot leather and scouting and are really in depth. I also know there's the lot that think they do a lot and then want to talk trash on somebody who works their freaking tail off on their property or works their tail off in their general life in order to afford that and be able to have that. My hat is off to that person. Mm-hmm. I love doing, like, for those who've never experienced it, to be able to work with the ground and the land and manipulate it for a positive outcome for wildlife, that is flipping awesome. But there's one deviating thing between all this, and it's the almighty dollar. Because when you earn the almighty dollar, they're investing their money into that. Why would they let somebody else do it? And it can make some ugly decisions like we're talking about. I mean, we're never going to figure it out. The reality is whatever your goals are, you got to chase the setting in which you can do that. If you're going to hunt public land in Pennsylvania, you need to curb your expectations if you think you're going to be killing 180 inch deer.
Yeah.
And I think that's also flawed to say, well, we need to be setting it up in a manner or have enough land that we can get that. It's probably not realistic. It's probably going to cost way too much for us to be able to do that efficiently. But
yeah.
I don't know. We're talking about something you and I are never going to figure out. We're never going to have the answers to. Nobody ever will.
It's just
– and
it's walking this razor's edge, right? I mean, it is – it's one of these things where it's how do you tell a group of people I'm going to ask a question. And I want you to answer it. What do you feel that people who own land are responsible for the natural resource that everybody gets to enjoy?
Never thought about it that way. So I don't know how I want
stewards.
To answer that, Dan.
I mean, you know, we hear the word steward thrown around, like in some of these stewardship programs that are available, and they teach people about the land, right?
Yeah.
And how the land can be, you know, you can manipulate your land for better habitat, not just for deer, but for all wildlife, snakes and ants and bugs and pollinators, whatever the case is. And so they do that because they want to see wildlife thrive on their property. Thus, they are stewards for wildlife, right? And so when it comes, people are doing that and then hunting on their own property. Great. Awesome. But in a way, do you feel there is responsibility there for someone who owns land to also allow people who do not have access to ground or good access to ground to come hunt on their property to save the future of hunting?
Gotcha. Now I understand what you're talking about. And this is a harsh answer, but my answer is absolutely not.
Mm-hmm.
Because there you are getting down a road. You're basically talking about free handouts, like what our government is trying to do in our daily life. And to me, that is BS. So do I think that somebody who owns land, works their tail off, like they should feel obligated to hand out to the neighborhood? No, I don't. And that's harsh. And what I would want to put on my heart is that I'm sure, because talk about the purpose of hunting. What purpose does hunting have for Mitchell?
Mm-hmm.
When I die and you look at this bear behind me and, you know, I've got this beautiful 170 inch Pennsylvania buck and all these, this different game animals, when I die, does any of that matter? No, it means zippo, nada, nil. But what would be cool is if I can look at some of these deer antlers in remembrance and say, hey, you know what? That experience, not only was it a cool hunting experience, but it also had an impact on somebody else because of the hunting experience we shared. Yeah. Or when I think about if I go to a friend's house or somebody else who sends me a picture and says, hey, this was an inspiration and this was important. Like that is the part, that's the purposeful part that's important. So roll that into your question about should somebody allow people to hunt their property. I would like to say that the what we've been talking about most of this time is that the happiness, the enjoyment is in the adventure itself and the experience itself. And if you can't find fulfillment in helping others and do that and it's all self-interest, yeah, there's a problem with that. So really the problem we're talking about is not necessarily the working government, so to speak, overhead. It's more like what's in your heart kind of deal. And mm-hmm. I know it's getting a little deep, but that's my take on it. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, it does. The devil's advocate. I mean, that was a devil's advocate question, right?
Oh, absolutely.
And so another devil's advocate question is the natural resource belongs to the state, right? I mean, they're the people who manage it, supposedly. And so when the natural when private landowners, they have the natural resource on their land. And so let's say, for example, public lands, the states start to sell public land. And this is all hypothetical. Who knows? This will never happen. I don't know whether or not it happens or not. But we've seen it, right? Some states sell off public land to get some money so they can put it back into the state and or pay for whatever. We've seen it happen before. Public land becomes overrun. The natural resource is all on private now. And now the people who own land get to benefit from the way things are now. And so then people who don't have access to private land don't get to experience the natural resource anymore. They don't get to experience hunting. That's, of course, again, before people shit on me, this is hypothetical. These are devil's advocate questions. But then at what point is it, and from the sounds of it, it's not the landowner's responsibility. I worked hard. I bought land. I get to enjoy the state's natural resource on my land. I get to do whatever I want to do on my property as long as I abide by the rules and regulations of the state on how, like what I can do, how I can hunt, stuff like that. And so it's just, again, these are all things that I think about as far as the future. And I feel like a lot of it is driven by antler size.
I don't necessarily disagree with that.
Yeah.
You talked about the state owning the land and everything else having impact. I think there's some states that do a much better job of managing their natural resources than other states. And I'm going to give you the perfect example. When you look here in my neck of the woods, you compare Pennsylvania's bear management to New Jersey's bear management. You want to talk about a world of difference? New Jersey had a closed bear season for almost 5 years, not because there was an issue with their low bear numbers or something from that. It was purely emotionally driven, and there was piss poor leaders involved making decisions that were based on emotion and not on data and science. And then you have special interest groups that are in charge of public land, certain aspects. It's owned by the state of New Jersey. However, it's controlled by a special interest group. Then we'll make things that says, yes, but even though this is public land and you guys can all free use it, we don't want anybody to bear hunt on it because we don't feel that that is an issue within the resources here. Are you kidding me? Mm-hmm. So really what it comes down to is, and I hate to tell you, it comes down to money and it comes down to piss poor leadership, and we're not going to fix that. This is the era of our life where it's going to keep getting worse. I hate to tell you, and whether you believe it or not, but I mean, I always make the joke, or it's not a joke, it's the truth. I always say I've read the book of Revelation, and when you read stuff like that, it kind of highlights that it's going to get worse before it gets better.
Yeah. this world we live in is a game show. I mean, it's so crazy. But I, going back to that New Jersey Bear, I think I was watching somebody, you know, they had all, you know, they stopped bear hunting in New Jersey. The bear population started to get out of control. And then I, like, some lady standing on her front porch recording two bears viciously fight each other over trash, over a trash can. You know, they were both going to a trash can, and then they started fighting over it, and there was people in the area. And so, yes, bears are cute, and they're emotional. We should not hunt them until they grab you, and then it's a completely different story.
Well, it's reactionary instead of being proactive. Think about the wolves. You just had Troy Pottinger talk about this. I like to listen to Troy when I can. He talked about the same concept with wolves in Idaho. Well, you had the same thing happen with bears in New Jersey. To give you an idea of what it was like, Dan, we hunted, they had a week-long bear season in October. First half was archery only. The second half of the week was archery and muzzleloader. So four of us went. Over that time frame, I believe it was in 4 days of hunting, three of us combined saw 34 bear sightings in 3 days. Now, for you know, that might not sound like a lot to you, but for somebody coming from the Northeast to go to an area like that, that is absolutely ridiculous. And the level of bear sign and damage and the folks you talk to and the experiences they had, to me, that is all piss poor management from a state to realize that. And then when you have responses coming through that say, we're going to use non-lethal measures. I mean, there's been so much data that says non-lethal measures do not work in managing wildlife. And yet there's still idiots out there. And I'm getting a little feisty. There's still idiots out there that want to instill this into our government and our practices for our natural resources. Come on, guys.
Yeah. This conversation could never end. Like, we could just keep talking for hours and hours.
It wouldn't end. So what positive thing do we want to talk about to end it?
Do you like meatloaf?
I love meatloaf.
Dude, I love meatloaf. I love, I don't know. You said, let's talk about something positive. I don't know why, but the first thing that popped into my head, and I say whatever I think, meatloaf. Dude, I love a good venison.
So make
meatloaf.
Sure I get this straight. Let me make sure I get this straight. If it was 25-year-old Dan, he probably would have said, "Do you like sex?" But at 42 years old, you say, "Do you like meatloaf?" I got you,
dude. Don't get me wrong. I'm 43, and I still like sex. But but the older I get, the more meatloaf sounds intriguing.
So. I'm gonna circle back. So at the beginning of this, you asked me what makes me happy. If I could lay out the perfect scenario, I'm gonna work my tail off. I'm gonna purchase land, which I'm trying to do. Mm-hmm. I'm gonna purchase land, and then I'm gonna do everything we were just talking about and saying creates problems. I'm gonna do it and be part of the problem. But you know what? That's what makes me happy, because I enjoy doing it. Yep. And it gives me a playing ground. Even if it's 20 acres, it's a playing ground, a place for me to go hide and have a little bit of solitude, involve my kids, involve my friends, involve family, involve whoever I want into that grand scheme of things. That's like from the hunting side of things, and you want to curb your mentality of from hunting, what makes you happy? That would be a happy thing, because I'm not doing it. I wouldn't be necessarily doing it at this point in my life for self-fulfillment. I would realize that any of the increase in that situation, I would give to God, because that's just where I'm at. But I would love to be part of that hunting wise, but that's kind of where to answer your question, we're talking about this. I feel like I have to be realistic and not sound like I'm above everybody else. I'm part of the problem too.
Get off your high horse, Mitch.
Yeah, exactly.
No, dude, I get it. Everybody's got their own deal, and you know, you definitely can't blame them for everybody wanting different things. And so there's no right answer. Hunting still makes me happy. The outdoors still makes me happy. Big bucks still make me happy. My kids,
absolutely.
My kids still make me happy. And so I think that's a great place to end this podcast, man. We're gonna have to talk about habitat a different day. Now we're gonna have to schedule a second podcast, and actually there will be no distracting BS session up front. We're gonna go right to habitat, and that way we don't get distracted by these other conversations. So
hey, that way Mitch doesn't go on any tangents.
Hey, that two of us, man. So Mitch, man, I really appreciate you taking time out of your day to do this.
Thanks, buddy. Appreciate it.